Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Foreign Correspondents Club. I'm Keith Bradshaw, and I'll be your host today on behalf of the Board of Governors. First, just a couple of housekeeping notes, if I could. One, everybody, please turn off your cell phones now, or at least put them on mute. Please, if everybody checks now, make sure that's the case. We do have a half dozen television cameras, and we don't want anybody unable to hear what Mr. Ng says because his cell phone is going off. Second, just housekeeping, I'd like to mention several of our upcoming events. On Wednesday evening, Steve Vines is hosting a gourmet dinner based on various recipes and food gurus whom he's written about in his book. On Thursday, we have Tony Wheeler, the co-founder of the Lonely Planet series. Some of you may have seen him when he spoke here in, I think it was 2006, and he's back again speaking about his experience at Lonely Planet and what he's been doing since he sold the company to the BBC. And then finally, next week, actually, we have Mr. Kuroda, and he is the president of the Asian Development Bank. And he'll be coming here from Manila to talk about growth options in Asia. We have places left for each of those three events, and we hope some of you might want to go to those as well. With that, I'd like to introduce our guest today. Mr. Ng is the Secretary of Education of the Hong Kong government. He has a long experience in human resources management at a wide range of multinationals. He was also the chairman of the Hong Kong Examinations and Assessment Authority for 3 years prior to taking his current post. With that, I introduce Mr. Ng.
Thank you, Keith. Good afternoon. How's your lunch? You want to add more to the lunch now? Good. So pleased to be here this afternoon to have a chance to exchange views and information with you. And I was given the task to speak about 20 minutes, and then I have another 20 minutes for open Q&A. I think that should be okay. And I'm a nice guy, so be nice to me on your questions, right? And Peter Barrett is there as a good old friend, so he's going to take care of me as well. What I want to do really to just try to very quick recap of a review and preview of the education in Hong Kong. While I already have about 2 hours preparation and pages of PowerPoint, I don't think you need that. So let me start with a couple of questions I just picked up over the discussions after arriving here and before I just start talking. I understand a couple of areas you might be interested. Why don't I just start with this one first? Then I'll go to my PowerPoint. First point, I was told you'll be interested in international school places. Is that a subject of interest? Oh, thank you very much. I picked the right thing, right? After the lucky draw on those topics. As I said at the Legislative Council's session a couple of weeks ago, and this is always very sensational topic. After being in a multinational corporation for about 25 years, I have this headache with me every day anyway. So I know what that means. But let me just put some numbers up first. We have about 37,000 places cut across about several institutes, international schools. And to date, we have the registered record of about 33,000 students. So if you have a very simple calculation, 37,000 versus 33, take-up rate is around 89%. People said, Eddie, you are making checks again. Yes, total balance, it is factual. But you need to look deeper into it. When I look at individual international schools, there would be a range of 102% occupancy rate or take-up rate versus another one about 70-75%. So it depends on individual national schools, the locations, the curriculum, and others. And the other one I know is, yes, we have sufficient international places for secondary school education. Not an issue. But when it comes to primary, it's always a headache. So this is the second one, we recognize it. And for that reason, every few years, the government particularly paying a lot of attention to this area. I had reviewed last two rounds. We put up, in order to help international schools, either expanding locally, or when newcomers coming in, or schools would like to have a major expansion. Then we provide vacant schools premises we have had in the stock, and then we release it from time to time, and then inviting interested international schools to come and tell us whether they're interested. And we have a very, very objective vetting committee to go for a lot of a good list of criteria. And in order to just finalize or recommending to which three, which four at round. So this is the first. Second one is, so in the past, I mean, many of you recognize it. Hong Kong has a lot of things, but there's a one thing Hong Kong doesn't have much. That is a piece of land. So for that one, we start actually providing greenfield sites as well in order to accommodate expansion or newcomers. And we had two rounds already. And people say, Eddie, you keep on talking, give us an example. Let me just pick Harrow in Tuen Mun area. We had the institute coming in telling us they're interested. We had gone through that vetting process of that particular site. Yes, that's in new territories. However, if you've been there before, it's like a palace. It's like a palace. It's a great site. I've been there several times now. And within 2 years from approving the site to start operating with 700 kids to be there every day now, it has been taking only 2 years. And this school is going to have another expansion plan to have another, I believe, around 400 to 500 more, making it 14,000 in a couple of years' time. Things can move that fast. I'm not saying everyone would be moving that direction, but I'm just giving you an example, maybe the best practices case, to show the sincerity of the Hong Kong SAR government. We mean it. We take it serious. Yet, yes, we have a couple of the greenfield sites now. We got over 17 applications. So this is like a supply and demand. And then we try very hard. I was given a couple examples as well. Eddie, my one is more important than the other one. Why don't you approve mine first? We understand that. But you know Hong Kong enough. People want to see very equitable process in the whole subject. That's why we still need to go through that a vetting committee, blah, 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 and so on, before we can finalize it. So this is a little bit about Keith answering the first part. That is about international school. There's another one talking about a recent international school being somewhere close to Tin Hau area. And then that site actually was a deal, and a rental deal, between a private construction institute and then a temporary lease for that particular school. And they've been there a few years already. And one day, a NGO came in saying, could we propose to turn that particular site into a youth hostel? I think you know which one is it. And I'm trying to be objective. And we heard about the same thing as similar simultaneously as you did. And then there are a lot of grumbling since then, and I met with the principal of the international school three times. Even one time was a Sunday afternoon, in another social occasion, we bump into each other. I spent 45 minutes talking about it. But this is important, this is important. Okay? And what are we going to do? People said, Eddie, we understand this is a private deal. We understand this is not governmental. However, I do have 250, 300 kids today. If I'm going to be moved out from this particular site at the end of the contract, that these kids will be off the street. So it's still an issue and concern for the Secretary of Education. And I said, I am with you. See what we can do. We do recommend the vacant schools. It's one of the devices I mentioned earlier on, and a couple of the greenfield sites. So we did. And actually, I did receive a letter of intent from that particular school. Okay? And things would move on further, just like the standard procedure I just mentioned. However, not all the details being sort of provided. Latest one and updated one. I talked to my colleagues as well in the Home Affairs and the Development Bureau, and then I understand lately, the my colleagues were suggesting that given the district council around there, given a lot of town planning discussions and so on, looks like there would not be much interest to convert that place to other purposes. So that means the district council would likely keep the status quo. So for that reason, that is an update. So short-term wise, some of the rumors being cleared. However, as Secretary for Education, I will continue watching on the subject and see what else we can do. So these are the two things I understand being sort of interested among some of you. So just let me clear that one. I think I have used up 10 minutes already, right? With another 10 minutes. What I've done is, so I want to pick up one or two cases to share with you. What is the latest education practices like in Hong Kong? This is the part of review. I go back that particular time, the vision. This is like an old statement, like a standard statement, but we really mean it. Because when we interview the parents and kids and teachers and school sponsoring bodies and some of the business plans here and there around Hong Kong, people are telling us, we really need you to ascertain providing quality school education as an infrastructure basic education to start off. This is a period. Second, we understand a lot of the school of thoughts, theories about education, but end of the day, we really want you to be able to provide a very, very key objective provider, that is lifelong education and total person development, period. Period. So talking about individual potentials, whether you have a curriculum, you find students to fit into it, or you have the students, you try to have certain curriculums to fit into the person. So these are the two sort of extreme. You need to find a balance on it. Thirdly, teachers, according to McKinsey Consulting, around the whole world of education sectors, what is the single most important successful factor for a successful education? Teachers. Teachers. So professional team, professional services actually are the key in determining success in education. Last but not the least, particularly the situation of Hong Kong, partnership. You don't have a Secretary for Education hiding up himself in the Ivy Tower for 2 months and come up with an education policy for next 5 years. For that reason, I think I do enjoy my job because every day I try to meet as many people as possible, different sector. Even the last few months, I was supposed to work on only one single topic, right? That is the moral and national education. Actually, that's not true. I've been doing a lot of other things, but the platform, the environment did not allow me to say so, but keep on working on other priorities other than only one, working with partners. So these are the few things I believe this is important. Yes, we put money into areas we think important. There were cases in the past, the Hong Kong government, some of my friends in the government would know, there were times that the government departments asked to cut expenses all the time, efficiency practices and so on. And education is always the area say, well, you would have the exception. Because of this is not a one day, 1 year project. This is an ongoing commitment in order to drive the continual infrastructural environment for a good quality education. Today, we got for this particular year, we have budgeted over $10 billion just for the 1 year. Every $5 spent by the government, we would have one on the education side. And that's why whenever I talk to the financial secretary, and before I ask for anything, he would say, Eddie, you already used up 20%, 25% of my budget. Don't ask any more. So this is a big spender. I said, no, I'm not a big spender. I'm a big investor. He never listened to it. Forget all these things. But what I really want to do is I want to tell you a story. Hong Kong, ever since returning to the the mainland, on the sovereignty, the last 15 years. Every day, every week, every month, every year, there will be a lot of debates off the street. There are a lot of policies being changed from time to time. There's one single policy not being so. That is the education reform. Back to 1999 and year 2000, we said, wait a minute, we got a problem here. What's the problem? The problem is kids are focusing on examination and results. I was given two examples, extreme lively, and then the students coming to the teachers and coming to the examination authority, I'm busy this year. And the parents was there, and said, well, I'm busy there, so tell me which chapter of this particular syllabus would be on the examination list, and I would take serious study. For the rest, why don't we skip it? That is what it is at that time. Second, I was on the other side recruiting graduates. I was with, I believe, Citi, JP, AT&T at the time, Motorola at the time as well. I was recruiting. When it comes to the graduates from Hong Kong, when I have a factory to run, I always enjoy hiring graduates from locals, local graduates, because they're excellent in execution. But when it comes to strategic planning, when it comes to creative marketing, when it comes to research and development, a little bit short in this area. They are very good at execution, but not have enough confidence, experience to be different, to be out of the box. That's the second observation. Of course, there are a lot of others, but let me just pick on this particular two. So what are we going to do? We set the scene. We set the fundamental planning. We have the vision set in 1999. In year 2000, we put up the fundamental switch of a new objective of education. Just what I mentioned earlier, lifelong education, self-owned, self-managed curriculum and learning, and also total person development, not just content of academic subjects. This is a fundamental. So, 2 years later, we had that consolidation of ideas for the Education Commission. It's not individuals, it's a group of major key stakeholders. And then we set out the roadmap in 2005, and then we have a lot of the framework done with a lot of lobbying in the year 2007, and then we actually put that into action in year 2009, and just the past July 2020, this year, we had the first graduate of this new academic structure, new Diploma of Secondary Education. We cut the secondary or high school education from 7 to 6 years. We cut two public exams to become one, because we find out that actually students would need to spend almost a year, if not more, just preparing one public exam. I'd rather have them spending more time learning than preparing examinations. So we cut 7 to 6. Second, we asked the university for 3 years university education to become 4, because we believe the kids will have a better time nurturing personality and the total person development in a university setting, closer to the international practices. So it's become 4 years. And then the other thing is, so in the past, we only have about 10, 15 choices for kids to choose at the high school before walking into the public examination, before making an attempt to the university. What we have done, we said, no. In the past, at the Form 4 level, you need to decide which stream, art stream, science stream, or social science. That's it. Think about it. When I was Form 4, fourth year high school, what do I know? We ask it to make that particular cut, and that is going to be the end of it. Then the mainstream, you go that particular direction. No more. The world doesn't work that way. The world works on more multidisciplinary. Give people a better way and are more ready before they need to make a major decision of their life. So what we have done, we said, we changed the whole curriculum for the new academic structure since 2009. We offer 4 compulsory subjects. We offer 20 elective subjects. We offer 6 additional languages other than Chinese and English. We also have 35 practical learning subjects, because the future does not lie on just the academic grammar type of school. We have a 35 practical subjects. So these are the differences he made, fundamentally. And the other thing, another point, I mentioned earlier about sort of the confidence. These are four compulsory subjects. We ask our senior secondary kids to make one decision. You need to take a compulsory subject, additional one, called liberal studies. You heard about the, I know you're very interested in the moral and national education, right? Do you like that particular kid? He's so strong, he's a form four level. I talked to him and the whole team from time to time, and they told me, Mr. Ng, I said, call me Eddie. Eventually, they call me Eddie. I said, Eddie, let me tell you, you create your own problem. I said, what do you mean? They love the liberal studies. That does not have a textbook. That have a six different core areas. You need to create your own subject area. You need to do your own research, write your own paper, take your own film for 3 years, and make your own presentation of your final findings. This is a self-owned learning. Building kids' confidence, building kids' way of articulation, communication, that's what they did. This is the liberal studies. You can sense that I'm so excited because this is going to turn a new chapter and page to the new talent platform from Hong Kong in a few years' time. By 2016, you will be able to see the first batch of university graduates coming out from this new academic structure. Okay, so I need to run quickly now. And the only other point I want to mention is education can no longer be a closed-door activity for the Education Bureau. For this particular education reform, I think we did one thing really right. We had the whole consultation engagement process throughout that 10 years. Just for that, 2004 and 6, we organized 420 forums and workshops. 27 people consulted, 3,300 submissions received. Just one of the many, many periods of. For that particular preparation as well, for that 3 years, we walked into the school. I attended about 100 school workshops, meeting with the sponsoring body, meeting with the principals and vice principals, meeting with the middle management, meeting with the teachers, parents, students, and the minor staff. Each school being touched at least 7 times to make sure we know this is a new academic reform. This is what we need today. Talk to them, work with them as partnership. This is what I just want to mention. Okay? I will skip this one, but Hong Kong's been doing pretty well in terms of the whole international standard certified by that particular system called PISA. Hong Kong, I believe, the number four, the top fourth in the world of that particular one. Now, this is a very complicated chart, but let me just present to you in a little bit different way. No need to worry about those thoughts, okay? The only thing you need to know is this is Hong Kong. This is the place of Hong Kong, okay? This area is education being impacted significantly by your social and economic family background. This is when you are high net worth family, this side. This is a no income group, this side. Interesting enough, Hong Kong is one, you can see Hong Kong is like this, more extreme. Hong Kong's kids, while they're doing well in education, they are least impacted by their socio-economic family background. That is tremendously good news. Why is that? And that's why when we did the education reform, we did another thing. If you are familiar with the system in Hong Kong, you notice that previously, only 40% of the senior secondary students would be able to allow to attempt the university entrance. But with the new academic structure, 100 of them, we have that opportunity. You can see the magnitude of it, because opportunity, that counts. People, the kids need the opportunities. This is a one in terms of a really good, perform very well in reading, in mathematics, and in science. And Hong Kong's doing pretty well, the top few around the world. So this is the situation of Hong Kong, and more to come. But with this new academic structure, I hope and I believe we will do even better. But at the same time, other places will definitely be doing better as well. And Shanghai is right here. This is the number one in the world. So this is another example. Okay, I'll move on quickly. But this is Minkit. He didn't do well at the Form 5 level. He actually was thinking of quitting the school. But then his teacher said, well, you need opportunity. Why don't you just stay on? Instead of going to the grammar type of programs, why don't you go to the practical learning? So he did like cooking and home economics, right? Home economics. He did it. First time ever, he said, I feel that I am learning. I'm attending something I really want to. And you know what? He already been in operation while he's still a student in the Chinese Cuisine Institute under the Vocational Training Council. He's one of the famous young cook now. He created new dishes, new menu. A lot of people are waiting for his menu to come, his service to serve. And he's so fulfilling, so rewarding about his new career. Does he need a university degree? He might. He said he might continue, but the practical learning give him a new life. This is a very good example. Okay, I'll go to the National Moral and National Education, right? I'll go to that one.
Okay, right here.
These are all familiar photos from the newspapers, right? Particularly my hairstyle, you know. Two things I want to mention. Is this a bad policy in the first place? Not sure. This has been like a 12-year exercise. If you look at the historical capturing of the whole thing, it was highlighted back to 1999 and year 2000, one of the seven major learning objectives. And then years 2007, 8, 9, 10, 3 years round of policy address been trying to suggest and decide that we need to promote moral and national education, period. And then in the mid-2010, the policy address make it extremely explicit now, we need to propose and to implement MNE as an independent subject for all the primary and secondary school students. And between May 2011 to end of that year, we have conducted 4 solid months of consultation one more time, because there was a first draft, and then people didn't like the first draft, a lot of feedbacks. So what we have done is, hey, put it back to the consultation and engagement process. And then the Legislative Council, the education panel, spent 2 solid days with a public hearing on the whole thing as well. About over 65 organizations coming in telling us how they feel. Eventually, the final draft of the particular curriculum guide actually was published in mid-April this year. And then in mid-May this year, actually there's an administrative circular memorandum and highlighting the actual details of implementation. That's mid-May. I joined the new government on the first day of July. On the 6th of July, there was a newspaper publishing something very different. There's one of the material manual talking about national education published from a body. And then government had no particular idea what that was. And then there were a lot of debate about the content, da-da-da-da-da. And government has only one thing to do. People said, Eddie, what did you do on that day? And I said, I read through that material quickly. I used about an hour or two with my team that evening, and then read through the material. And I said, this one page, I got a problem. So I highlighted the page, and the newspapers reported that. And then they said, wow, government really actually have the guts to actually say it. I said, why not? But since then, that created one thing that we did not anticipate, the emotional response to it, creating a lot of fear about the subject, which we did not anticipate. And since then, we tried to do different rounds of clarification on the content and trying to address the fear of brainwash, trying to address in terms of the bias, education, blah, blah, blah. We did it. However, the community actually turned the other way when more and more people feel actually insecure, uncomfortable, in fear. And also at the period of time, that was the election. So everything turned to the direction. For that particular part, we said, okay, even though this policy been evolved for almost 10 years, with 4 years, solid 4 years, developing the final policies, we need to take a critical look at it. So that was the position. And I said, well, let's form another committee, have their own channels, totally independent, to find out what's wrong with this. So that's what we did. That was in July 29. And since then, a lot of discussions, and I was working very hard at that period. I meet different groups, youth and parents and so on, every day that period, try to make sure I understand it properly. Because it's important, such a serious policy, what's wrong with it? So it took me a month and then to finalize, and then at the September the 8th, we said, wow, the fear actually is getting to the little bit sort of a threshold in terms of number of people evolving into this one, and actually there's no more discussion rationally. It's basically just emotion. So we said, okay, I talked to the chief executive, and then chief secretary, and then with the chairman of the committee, Anna Wu, and we decided, let's go for drastic correction, remedial changes. We launched a major policy change. I'm not sure it's remedial, but a major policy change to this whole policy. Basically, stop the area that has the problem, and then ask the committee to particularly look at the recommendations made by the government on that day. Within a month, that committee, embracing all the people with different views, different background, within a month, they organize 6 meetings. They come back and say, well, we endorse the government's recommendation. We recommend to the government to implement it. And the same day, we make the decision to endorse those recommendations. And you can see, since then, the whole thing's calmed down a little bit. And then the people say, what does that mean? That means what? There's a policy. Either you want everybody to do it the same way, one policy for all, or you would allow the flexibility and decision to be made by the school sponsoring body and the schools, because they know the best. So either how to do it, what outline, what content, and when would they want to do it, in what format, leave it to the school. Because we find out parents trust teachers more than anyone else. So teachers, schools. And second, from then on, government will withdraw the particular paper and that curriculum guide is still available. If you want it, take it. At the same time, we want to make it very sure for schools, they will still want to continue implementing it. No one should stop them because the decision and discretion stays with the school. And we actually strongly advise the school to work closely together with parents and with students. This end the whole thing. And then you might want to ask, Eddie, what's the learning? Two things. The first one is, so you might have the best policy on earth, but when you do the implementation, make sure you address not just the rational part of the policy, but also the emotional part of it. And also, even though everything's right done, at the day of implementation, you still need to watch closely of the whole thing. Second, yes, key stakeholders, schools, principals, teachers, don't ever overlook the response and knowledge required, information required by parents and students. These are the two areas we are running a little bit short in the consultation in the first round. Last but not the least, we believe that the government learned a good lesson. We need to communicate better in the future. We need to have our own platform to communicate and clarify as well. So, Keith, I think I covered these two more sensational part of it. Maybe I'll just stop here for a while and then accommodate some questions first. Thank you.
Do you want a statement?
Okay.
Jacob. And with that, maybe if we throw it open for questions, Mike, please wait for the microphone.
First of all, Eddie, well done. Coming to a cynical audience and opening yourself up, and I think you deserve some applause for that. Well done. I'm not going to ask you about national education. Not because you asked me not to at the beginning, but because I think you need to prepare yourself for the audit queries on the money that was spent on developing those teaching materials. So I let you save your energy for that. I want to ask you about the funding, the basic funding of education. At local school level, it's basically completely funded. That is, it's 12 years, I think, still free and compulsory. So irrespective of how well off the parents are, whether they're very rich or very poor, whether they're expat or local, whatever, it doesn't matter. The teaching, the education of their children is 100% funded. The other end of the spectrum, the international schools, is basically not funded at all. So even though some of those parents are very well off, some are not so well off, and many of the children are local as well, but they get effectively zero assistance with the recurrent cost. I know there's some assistance for capital. And in the middle, you have this ugly child of the English Schools Foundation, where is some recurrent subvention given, but it is not any longer, or it used to be, per capita basis the same as the cost of educating a local child in a local school. That was stopped many years ago. And now it's being given as a reason to stop the subvention altogether is that parity with international schools, which fundamentally seems to me to be wrong. It's funding institutions rather than individuals, rather than the students themselves. So my question is, you've already got a voucher system for kindergartens. Why can't we extend the voucher system on through education so that every lawfully resident child of a lawfully resident parent receives the same subsidy for their child to study and leave it to the parents to choose which kind of school the child goes to? Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. And this particular case of the education funding, the rationale behind it, as well as the specific case of the ESF. My understanding of the subjects focus on two areas. The first one is, what is the primary responsibility of a government? You need to provide education for your citizens, period. So, as a policy, all the local curriculum education and schooling should receive support from the government, period. That's why we have the 9 years compulsory education in the first place, with the new academic structure become 12 years free education, and we are going to focus more in another 3 years subsidized education for the kindergarten to make it 15 years unbroken. These are the planning in the process. Local curriculum for the local community, period. Then the question that might raise is how about those who are non-local? On non-local curriculum. I'm not talking about individual, I'm talking about curriculum. Okay? For those one, we have 48 international schools. They've been doing a lot of those well, including ESF. I put ESF aside a little bit first about the international schools. Many of those coming in, what they need is, hey, help me out, I got the demand here, I want you to help me facilitate. So sometimes we provide piece of land at a very, very just nominal charges, and then we provide capital in case they need the capital for the capital projects and renewal and so on. And at the same time, and then they might need facilities and other convenience that we will provide, but not direct subsidy, not direct subsidy. That applies to all of them. So this is the part two. Now it comes to the ESF. For a good historic reasons, ESF has been receiving subvention from the government for a long, long time. So we receive from time to time international schools coming in. Wait a minute, how come you give the subvention to this one and not us? Are you telling us that we are not important, we are not good, blah, 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 blah. And I understand this has been a topic of discussion at the government and public level for for as long as Mike knows, around about 10 years. And I believe May 2011, I believe the education panel and the LegCo had a very good debate on the subject and made a solid decision that, hey guys, you need to put a settlement to the whole thing. You can keep on tracking for another year, 2 years, 3 years. So the idea is, you need to cease from providing the subvention unless turn it into another opportunity is the ESF will be able to provide educational services needed by the community and then do a switch to different form of subsidies. This is the first part. The second part relates to, wait a minute, Eddie, we've been doing very well, we've been contributing, providing a lot of value to the community. What is it? And now I have my kids here, I have expectation of my kids to be here, they are going to be interrupted, their interests will be jeopardized because of this particular move. So we said, we understand it, let's work it out, the best way to proceed with this particular board direction, and then to the satisfaction of both parties. And we do guarantee that no single kid should be affected, eligible kids should be affected by this move, even though it will be as long as 13 years. So these are the few sort of guiding principles guiding us through. And the chairman and the CEO of the ESF been talking with the Bureau for a few times since my boarding. And for the reasons of the above, we do not disagree with these principles. We just want to find a better way to execute and making sure there will be sufficient communication. And ESF even suggested, well, in the interim, I still need the capital to do certain renovation and refurnishing projects. So can I do with a selective population of 150 places, charging like a $500,000, like a debenture equivalent type of arrangement? That's what it was. And we look at it and say, well, you do not need approval from the government because of the whole ESF is running on a couple of those ordinances, pretty much self-autonomous in managing the whole business because they are running the non-local curriculum as well. They will be able to decide their own particular student criteria, entrance, da da da. So for that one, they do not need approval from us, but if we take a look of it, we do not object to it. So that's how we work in terms of those working relationship. Is it the best solution? I don't know. But definitely, you know, we need to make sure that we work closely together to find the best way to implement it. And there's always an opportunity at the second point I made all the time, that is the ESF would work it out in terms of the type of services they're able to provide, which would be able to benefit the community. Then this is the area we will relook at it. And I believe that the CEO, the chairman in the committee, and the Bureau senior executive been working very hard on the subject right now. Sorry, long answer.
Okay, I'll speak my question in the front here.
There have been many complaints by head teachers over the years. I can recall complaints about the pension program, about having parents represented on school boards, and more recently, a show about the size of classes. It seems to me you have an uphill task in dealing with change, but the agents of change are not willing to change. So what are your plans to persuade the teachers to adopt to the new targets which you've courageously outlined?
Thank you, Peter. Look at it this way. We can always put the blame on the teachers that they are not willing to change. But if you look at the type of magnitude of changes I just mentioned, I just quote you two examples. The magnitude of change, tremendous. Putting a lot of pressure on the teachers all the way, all the time. Not that they are not able to deal with it, but they just have too many changes at the same time, driving them, forgive my language, nuts. So for the first part, one of my focus for the next 5 years is so, as the chief executive rightfully highlighted, let's do no more major changes. Let's stabilize it and then continue and consolidate those changes already in place, first. And second, we invest in teachers is one of my major focus. We invest in teachers. Are we able to provide more learning? Are we able to cut down the loading? You remember one of my most respectful professor, Edmund Goh, professor of USD. Unfortunately, he passed away in the mid of the major mission. He passed away. One of his major contributions is the well-loading task force of teachers. He outlined quite a number of recommendations for us to follow, not just to reduce the well-loading, but turn the approaches more meaningful and more reasonable in terms of teaching hours, number of classes teach a week, and so on, so that teacher will have more time focusing on more professional element, at least have a time to breathe. Yes, some of them might find it difficult to switch and change. For that reason, as I mentioned earlier, one of the good examples is on the education reform. I personally run into around 50 workshops just with teachers. You listen to them. Actually, the way you listen already solve half of their problem. The problem, you never listen. That's why they have nowhere to turn to. Once you listen, actually, they solve part of the problems already. That's something we need to do. So, I agree with Peter. We need to have a more robust, better planned change management model, engaging the teachers together. And one of my plans is to upgrade the whole area of a leadership development for teachers and for the school leaders. I think this is fundamentally critical, because once they have a better exposure and then a more reasonable scope and management of their own time in serving, and then they will be able to get into a more advanced level. As McKenzie said, teachers is the number one top quality guarantee for the education. Thank you, Peter.
Jake?
Eddie, what are you going to do for the people who live in Chung Shui, Fanling, and other border towns who are seeing their children pushed out of kindergarten and primary schools by an enormous and growing influx of students from across the mainland who prefer to study in Hong Kong?
Thank you. Thank you, Jake. Two parts of it. One part is people from the north coming down to take the education, and then first group would be those who already been holding Hong Kong ID cards. That's one group. We got about 160 to 170,000 of them over the years. And then our good news is we have a better idea what it is, when it's going to happen. And then we do have some very good references, like in the medical field, in the medical services, at least over half of them will be utilizing the services we know it. On the education side, the percentage might be a little bit lower, but still be very significant. So we are timing the happening of those population, number one. And number two, and right now in the northern part of New Territories, and not only that is an issue of supply and demand, it's also an issue of even distribution. I have areas like in Tai Po and Sha Tin, and they have surplus places. I have tremendous long queue trying to get in Fanling and Shanghai. So all we need to do is do a little bit redistribution mapping. So this is one thing we are working on right now. And we actually would be able to, on the vertical side, we move it down to Tai Po, Sha Tin, and places. On the horizontal side, we move it to Yuen Long, Tuen Mun area as well. So these are the two, and providing the Better Planet school bus would be one way to solve it as well. And at the same time, we look at the capacity of the schools and places in that particular jammed cities or districts, like Fanling and Shanghai. And now we have some temporary measurement last couple of years. We ask schools to extend one or two more seats, which is a standard provision in order to accommodate ad hoc type of up and down of this one. And the longer term, actually, this is one area of concern. The other area is if the kids coming in without much of parental care, because parents still working up north, we have another type of problem. Teachers need to find a better way and better training to handle that as well. So these are the few things that we scope it together. and we try to make sure needs are being addressed properly.
We need to have at least one moral and national education question in here somewhere, so why don't I put one in? It's been a delicate period right now for Beijing with the Party Congress later this week and then going all the way through the National People's Congress in March. But do you detect any appetite for maybe reopening the issue on the part of Beijing once this winter's activities are done, say, in March? Is there any desire maybe that this will pop out again on us in April or May or June?
Okay. Ever since I've been reporting duty on the first day of July, and then on this particular moral and national education, in front of me will be the papers and policies announced by the ex-chief executive and ex-secretary for education. I have not been given any particular request or desire or mentioning about what I would be expected to do from Beijing. So that's the first part I would like to clarify. And the second one is, so after the October the 8th of the announcement, confirmation of the changes and so on, actually things cool down and then are getting more peaceful now. At the same time, there are more schools coming back, say, hey, I still want to do it, what can I do? And then we explain to them about the particular policy definitions, like they are welcome to do it by themselves. They have all the autonomy to plan and schedule and format and so on. And then we have standard regional support of any kind of educational services. And then the withdrawal type of curriculum guide is still there. If they want to use it, they're still there. Government has not provided any particular governmental training or education material yet. So for that one, they need to produce their own as well. So that, if you ask me what's going to happen, I believe that will continue. But the two good things would be observing, I think. One is, schools, when they are doing it, you know, they will be doing it together with the parents and the students and teachers all together, instead of planning on one or two particular stakeholder groups. There will be an all together type of efforts. So it's very transparent. The second thing I believe would be equally important is that with this definition in our final approved amendment of the policy, we would encourage the school to continue as a matter of right for school and kids to take moral, civic, and national education together. So it's also inclusive of the civic education to make it broader. Again, try to make sure kids have opportunity for multi-dimensional thinking, fair input, judgment to be formed by their own perspective, with teachers providing the learning support but without imposing of positioning or value. End of the day, we would like our kids to be able to form their own opinion, idea, have their own set of value, and be able to identify with themselves, with the Hong Kong community, with the country, with the group. That's what we want from them. Thank you.
We are over time, but he has had his hand up so patiently this whole time. If you can just ask a quick question, we're over time, but I want to give you a chance.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on Mike's question, which I don't think he actually answered properly. Why is there no direct subsidy of international schools? Where did that overriding principle come from? And then would you consider some kind of voucher system for international schools? And in the spirit of exams, I'd like the first to be an essay answer and the second to be just a yes or no.
Then I answer the yes and no. I do not have any particular plan whatsoever at this point of a voucher scheme for the international school, because if you look at it from that perspective, where do I get the proper policy guide and criteria about that 33,000 students under the education system? And then what are the needs? What sort of definition of subsidy of what sort of education and what sort of activities? What sort of other items that Mike and I are familiar with the governmental? What sort of items we should be funding? All those discussions, you need to have a good idea. Second one is, so look back in other places. So would other countries also be subsidizing international schools? In what format? That would be a very interesting topic to study further.
Thank you. I apologize. We are way over past 2 o'clock, and we always cut off at 2 o'clock. We did promise we'd be leaving, but we do thank you very much for coming, and I'd like to give you a gift. Remember the club by, as we always
okay,
do.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we hope to see many of you at the upcoming events we've just described. Thank you.